Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2010. Lecture 16, delivered on October 25, 2010. The title of this lecture is Marginal Cost of Capital.
Today, marginal cost of capital. When I went through weighted average cost of capital, I was giving you the basic idea of what constitutes optimal capital structure. To some extent, how we would locate it, at least in a graphical kind of way. For the present exercise, we're going to assume that the optimal capital structure has been found. 50% debt, 50% equity, 40% debt, 60% equity, something along that line. And from that assumption, we can then begin to determine the most important thing of all, the marginal cost of capital. In finance, as in economics, we work on the presumption, not the assumption, the presumption that it is the marginal cost that is what drives behavior. And specifically, with respect to optimal choices, it is what happens at the margin that matters. Now, from economics, you would remember that marginal cost rises. The law of increasing marginal cost drives that marginal cost curve upward, so that as you produce more, each extra unit you produce will cost more than the last unit. And ultimately, your decision on whether to produce a unit will be driven by whether the cost of the last unit is less than or more than the revenue from the last unit. If I make 100 units of a product, and the 100th unit can bring into the cash drawer $1.95, but that 100th unit costs $1.97 to make, I'm not going to make that unit because I'm going to ding my profit 2 cents. As long as the marginal revenue, the extra revenue, is more than the marginal cost, the extra cost, I will make it. But if there is any part of that production that is more expensive than what I can take in from it, I'm done. If the cost of the capital to do a project is 18%, but my return on that project, return on the investment, is 22%, I will certainly embrace that project. Now let's take it to a scenario that will be a little uncomfortable for some of you. I begin a project that's going to cost $20 million. Now I finance the first $19,500,000. At 16%. Now this investment again is going to return us 20%. The first $19,500,000 I can get at 16%. The last $500,000 will cost me 22%. Do I take on that project or not? Again, the project will return 20% on investment. The project's going to cost $20 million, and I can get the first $19,500,000 of it at 16%. The last $500,000 is going to cost me 22%. Do I take that project on or not? Up or down? What's your gut say to you? Your gut is wrong. That's just because you don't eat right. You won't until you're in your 40s. Then you'll worry about fiber. You don't take that project. Because the cost of the project at the margin, the last dollar you spend on it, costs you more than that project is going to take in. You will not take on that project. And I can assure you that there are going to be a lot of supposed quant jocks in your business who are going to bitch their heads off when they say, well, it's only $500,000 that cost 22%. Look at all that money. We've already spent that money. That $19,500 is spent. What do you call money that you've already spent? What is that? No, it's called sunk cost. It's gone. It went to
16%?
Yeah. 19,500,000 I spent, I got it at 16%. The last 500,000.
You're not going to make 20% off of that later?
Well, even yeah, I'll make 20%, but the last $500,000 is going to cost me 22%.
Project or
no? Oh, no. You're going to, well, it's all or nothing. You're going to take all or nothing. The project's all or nothing.
Okay. So if you're making 4% off 19.5, why would you, but it's all or nothing?
Because the last dollar I spend is going to cost me more than I can make from it. Yes, and I can guarantee you that does not sound logical, does it? Yeah, but you see the sunk cost, that 19,500,000. You see, I borrowed that at 16%. Then I'm going to go back to the banker and say, well, I need the last 500,000. Okay, we're going to finance that at 22%. Well, where is that 19,500,000 at the point you go back to the bank and get hit at 22%? Where is that 19,500,000? It's gone. It's with Jesus now. It's dead. It's being found by Ghost Hunters International. EVPs seem to indicate that there is $19,500,000 still saying, use me as an investment decision. You see, you can't. It's gone. You have to worry about the last dollar. When you walk into that bank for the last dollar, that last dollar is going to be more than the return on the investment. The last dollar, when you have already spent the 19.5, you then go back for the financing on the last 500,000 of the project. And what? It doesn't sound right. It will. Trust me, you have to think about it for a while. But this is, and it sounds brutal. And like I said, I can guarantee you that there will be people in the company who will not be enlightened, who will say exactly what you're saying. They will say, no, no, no. You're going to get $19,500,000 of this project. In other words, you're going to get 97.5% of this project financed at 16%, and the project gives you 20%.
So you make 4% on that part, right?
Do you make 4% on that part? No, you don't. We already talked about this is an all or nothing project. At $19,500,000, you don't have a completed project. You have no revenue. You have nothing at $19,500,000. You have a project when you have spent $20 million. With $19,500,000, you have no project finished. You have a building, and they haven't put in the toilets. Which I suppose, you know, if you put a porta potty outside, don't get into those complicated scenarios. Now we're going to walk through this together. Yeah, go ahead.
So what if you reverse it and said you took out, you financed it first at 500,000 at 22% and then got the 19.5?
You're not going to do it that way. It's never going to happen. Your cost of capital will rise. The banker is not going to give you a high interest rate on your first money and then lower on your last money. It will work the other way. The marginal cost will rise. And that's, and you know, this that's, I think I said it. I don't know if I did or not. That seemed awfully sterile to me when I first learned that. And then when I went to set up financing in a business, they just said, well, this much is going to cost you this. And then as they gave me increments on more money that I would borrow, they gave me a higher interest rate. And it was just that whole thing. I thought, well, this maybe it's just an unusual thing. Nope, that's the way it works. The more you borrow, the worse it's going to get. When a company first starts to borrow money it's going to find that its debt is a lot cheaper than when it's leveraging itself way out there. The bondholders are going to get worried, and they're going to get more worried the more you borrow because the risk of default goes up. And that's what's going to happen with any banker. In the scenario in this project, I'm describing a company called Stonewood Products, and its capital structure is 35% debt and 65% equity. And they consider that optimal. Now, I caution in this problem, there's a little bit of a looseness on one part, but I'm trying to take you through the just how to do it, how to attack the problem, step by step. And as I told a couple of people in my office, if you start thinking about what you're doing, oh, you can get so in trouble doing that. Just follow. Now, this is an optimal. Like I said, in these problems, I'll tell you the optimal capital structure. It is 35% debt, 65% equity. Now, the net income for the coming year is expected to be $1.2 million. Notice how I said net income. You have got to watch it, because if there is a dividend paid, that has to be taken away before. Yeah. That's why I was reading it. Oh, God. Oh. You know, every time I move that, it just gives me vertigo. Like, let's try it again. Again, this is critical. I gave you net income here. If there's a dividend paid, then you have to take that out before you have internally generated equity that the company can plow into operations. So I just gave you $1.2 million net income. That should be a great big flag to you. Oh, we need to watch it here. Because if there's a dividend paid, I have to subtract that. Duke Manti, the loan officer at the local bank, has set up the following schedule for Stonewood Products borrowings. Now, you look at that schedule. For $0 to $250,000, the bank will charge 10%. For anything in excess of $250,000, it's 12%. I've given you right now what is called a break point. In other words, there is going to be a jump in the marginal cost of capital at $250,001. The first $250,000 you borrow will be at one rate, and then there's going to be a jump. Now, we've got 40,000 shares of common stock outstanding, and the firm's tax rate is 40%. Why do I care about the firm's tax rate? What does that have to do with anything? I gave you net income, so taxes have already been taken out. Why do I care about the tax rate? Come on, come on. I think someone said it. Yeah, after-tax cost of debt. We're calculating cost of capital here. So I need that tax rate. I want you to key on the numbers. It's like I do when I teach math courses, when I teach basic economics or investments courses. As you're reading the word problem, key on the numbers. Once you've got the numbers out of the word problem, it becomes a lot easier than a word problem. 40%. Now, where does that? There are 40,000 shares of common stock outstanding. Why would that matter? The price per share of the Stonewood Products common stock is $50. They've declared a $5 a share dividend to be paid in 1 year. Okay? So, how much dividend are they going to pay? What's the total value of the dividend they're going to pay? $200,000. $40,000, 40,000 shares and a $5 a share dividend. So what is the amount of money that they will have available for investing in their company, for plowback? $1 million. Notice how in these more realistic kinds of problems, the numbers don't all come for a specific thing at the same time. So now I know the net income was $1.2 million. I know that the dividend was $200,000. So I know that what the company has available in internally generated equity, that is existing common shareholders' equity, what they have a claim on, will be, in the retained earnings, will be $1 million. So that helps us out. So now we're going to crank it on down here. The company's expected growth is 9%. Cost of float for new common is 8% of the market price of the stock. Managers are considering several investment opportunities for the upcoming year. And they have asked the senior financial analyst, Gabriel Maple, to recommend which of the following projects should be undertaken. Now, one thing you're going to do in this project here, and this will be what's called an investment opportunity schedule, is you're going to rearrange these projects from the highest rate of return to the lowest. That will be one thing that you will do in this project, is rearrange them. But that's not right now. First things first, let's get the cost of the cheaper debt. The cost of the cheaper debt is going to be the cost of debt times 1 minus the tax rate. That will be your tier 1 debt. So what do you get for it? That one's not complicated. What is it going to be? Reach in there and give me the number that you'll what you'll find. Look at your loan amounts and the tiers on them. What's your first debt cost of debt? At the level of the bank, what's your first cost? Yeah, it's 10%. So that's what you do, is you take 10% times 1 minus the tax rate of this company, which comes out to be 10% times 1 minus 0.40. So what's your first cost of debt? Someone tell me. Yes, 6%. Your first cost of debt is going to be 6%. It's going to be the 10% cost of your first tier of debt times 1 minus your marginal tax rate. So that'll be 6% is your after-tax cost of debt for the first $250,000 that you borrow. Now let's go on to the next cost, the cost of the more expensive debt. The cost of your more expensive debt is calculated the same way, except that this would be for the debt above $250,000 if you choose to take on that kind of debt. And it will still be case of D times 1 minus tau or 1 minus T, but in this case it will be 12% times 1 minus 0.4. So what do you get for that one? Now we have to, let me point this out. You remember in the formulas that I gave you different kinds of capital. There was debt capital, and then there was preferred capital, and then there was common stock capital. In this problem, this company will not use preferred stock. I didn't mention it, and that means that it's not an option. So the next capital that we will have to price will be existing common. Now, I could have offered the option that the company could deal in preferred as well, but I didn't in this problem. Oftentimes, I don't anymore because I just don't see preferred as being that popular. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure it is, but cost of internally generated equity. Do you remember the formula for it? You've got to find your formula for it. Equals? Plus G. Now, watch yourself. I caution you. Did I give you D0 or did I give you D1 in this problem? I did. Yes, that's right. They anticipate paying a dividend next year. So I gave you the dividend next year. Okay? So D1 was given to you. If I had given you what they just paid for the dividend, you would have to do 1 plus G on it to grow it to next year's. Again, watch that. On the exam, that's the single point where people fall apart on this problem. And once the problem falls apart, you get everything wrong after that. Don't make that mistake. Watch whether I've given you D0 or D1 in the problem. In this case, I gave you D1, what they will pay next year. If I had given you what they just paid, you would have had to take that times 1 plus the growth rate to see what it would have been next year. But I didn't. I gave you what they expect to pay as a dividend. So now we can move on here and hammer out the cost of existing equity, which would be, what is their dividend per share next year? $5. What's their price per share? $50. And I am playing a little loose with now versus a year on that price of the stock. Plus the growth rate. What's the growth rate? What the hell is the growth rate? 9. I knew that. 0.09. What do you get? The cost of internally generated equity is 19%. Now, in other words, the money that they have after they pay their dividends, that money actually costs them 19%. That money costs them 19%. It's very difficult to explain this to someone who has not had a finance course. That's the money the company made. How does that have a cost? It does have a cost. It's 19%. In fact, you see, if they didn't invest that money in their own company, they could have invested it somewhere else. What this calculation essentially does is say, what would they have made by taking their net income after they paid their dividend, in other words, their earnings, and invested those somewhere else besides their company? At the risk level that is being signaled by the stock market, they're throwing away 19%. So they had damn well better have something good to do with that money that will generate as much for them. That's a little bit too stark, but that's in a very important way. That's what's going on here. That company has $1 million after it pays its dividend. Now, that company can either invest that money in itself or it could go out and invest it somewhere else. The fact that it chooses to invest that money in itself means that it is surrendering, it is foregoing the next best alternative investment. According to this calculation, that opportunity cost of using that money for the company's own projects is 19%. It really does have a cost. 19%. Now for the cost of externally generated equity, we have to include the float in the calculation of D1 over P new, and that's an N there, sorry, minus the float plus G. So if they sell stock to raise more money, in other words, if they raise externally generated equity capital, It would be $5 divided by $50 minus $4. The float, that $4 comes from 8% of $50. That's what the brokers are going to keep. So in other words, if the company raises new equity capital, it gets to keep $46 after the brokers have taken their cut on each share. If you crank that out, you'll find that the number comes out to be 19.87%. I'm just testing you. Yes, there was a G in there, 0.09. See, good, you saw that. I left it out just to see if anyone would. Okay, fine. Cynical. Cynical, that's what you are. Now come the break points. Sorry. I'm just not used to using these failed devices like this. You know, I am so tired of having that thing go into focus and out of focus. It just keeps making me think that I really need to adjust my meds. Okay. We have to go to the break points. Now, the way I explain the breakpoints is like this. The breakpoints are when the company has to get off its fat ass and go somewhere. So, I'm going to sit here, I'm the manager. Project's underway, and I am comfortable. Someone bring me Doritos. But at what point, what is the first place where I have to get up and go someplace to get some money? At what dollar value? The first place. One. What dollar value of money? Well, it's actually the first place. Where would I have to go back to the bank for money? No. You know what? I'm glad you said that, though. Why would I go to the bank and borrow the $250,000 before I spend a dime of the net income of the earnings? Why would I go to the bank and borrow the $250,000 to start the game rolling? Go. Yes. It's cheap. Oh, I love it. Someone give him a cookie. Yes. It's cheaper. I'm not going to spend my money if I can use other people's money at a cheaper VAT rate. I mean, seriously. Why would I go and use that $1 million I've got after I pay my dividends, the internally generated equity? That's expensive money. I can go to the bank and borrow $250,000 so cheap. I'll borrow first. $250,000. So my first break point, my first place where I have to get up off my ass and go somewhere is when I add $250,000. Because that's where my cost of capital first jumps. My first jump in my cost of capital happens at $250,000. Because that's the first place where money becomes more expensive. I have to use more expensive money. Okay? So now I'm going to look at this and say, okay, I know that I use 35% debt. So I'm saying, okay, $250,000 is 35% of what number? In other words, I've got a big wad of money here. I'm going to use 35% debt. So the first break point isn't at $250,000. It's $250,000 divided by, did I do that right? There, one more. I'm talking and chewing gum at the same time. 0.35. That will be my first break point. Break point one will be where you run out of debt, your first level of debt, divided by the percent debt in capital structure. Now, if I work that out, that means that I will spend a total of $714,285.71 before I really have to get off my butt. Because $250,000 in debt will be 35% of what I'm using, of what I'm burning. The other 65% will be what I'm burning in capital. Now, break point two is going to be my internally generated equity. Over my percent of equity in the capital structure. Trust me, just do this. Don't ask why, just do it. And in this case, it will come out that I will have $1 million in internally generated equity, and that's 65% of my capital structure. Oh, you can't see this worth a damn, can you? I'm just riding along. Fail. Everyone's kind of looking, what the hell are you writing up there? I do apologize. I'm just not into this kind of thing. I like to write on a whiteboard. Yeah. Spank me hard and call me Doris. Yes, I do. Cute. You see, my first break point is when $250,000 of debt money used at 35% of all my money that I'm working with has gone through. My second break point is where my $1 million as 65% of what I am using has been gone through. That's how you find the break points. Break point one will be your first debt threshold divided by that percentage of the percentage of debt in your optimal capital structure. The next break point will be where you've run through your common stock. Divide how much common stock money you had, existing common stock money, divided by how much you, of what percentage that is in what you're spending. Now, after you've gone through your first debt level, you go to your next debt level. And then you go to your equity. And then, if there's preferred, well, then you're going to go to new equity or preferred. Now, I'm not going to do preferred in this. But in here, we can now say, where's breakpoint three? There is none. Because first you're going to use debt level 1, then jump to debt level 2. That will happen at $714,285.71. Then you'll keep burning until you burn through your $1 million. And then you'll go to selling new stock. There will be no more breakpoints because that's it. You'll just keep selling stock until and borrowing at the more expensive rate. There's no third breakpoint because you're not using preferred stock. Now, if there, in some cases, you might have another threshold here on debt, that would cause another breakpoint if there were another threshold on debt. But as it stands now, you're going to burn $714,285, 35% debt, 65% of your retained earnings. And then you're going to jump to your second level of debt. So that's your breakpoint. You're going to keep burning money until you've burned through $1,538,461.54. That will be where you have to go out and start selling common stock. So that constitutes your second breakpoint. So at this point, above $1,538,461.54, you're using expensive debt and you're using new issue common. There are no other places. So everything after that will be at the most expensive cost of capital. The cost of expensive debt and the cost of expensive newly generated equity money. So now we're going to go and calculate the marginal costs of capital. Your first level of capital is going to be 35%. Whoops, let me do it this way. 35% of your cost is going to come from debt. Your cheap debt is going to cost you 6%. And 65% is going to come from your retained earnings for the year. How much does that kind of, what does that cost you? What's the cost of that capital? What's your retained earnings cost you? Look at your first page. That's your first level for the marginal cost of capital. That also happens to be your weighted average cost of capital. That's your weighted average cost of capital, your WACC. Now, we go to our second. At $714,000 about, we have to go to the bank. So at that first break point, okay, again, below that break point, capital is going to cost you 14.45% weighted overall. Once you have burned through $714,285, for heaven's sakes, can't I keep that straight? Sorry, let me put that up. At $714,250-some-dollars, whatever it was, I've got to go to the bank and borrow more expensive money. So after once I've crossed the first breakpoint, my new marginal cost of capital is going to be 35% debt times 7.2% plus 0.65 times 19%. Say that again. I'm not hearing. There's a roar up here. Because I'm not going to sell new common stock now. I'm just going to the bank. I'm just going to the bank to borrow more money, but it's going to be a little more expensive. I'm not going to sell common stock until I have to. Because that's, see, I've been burning 65% of what I've been spending so far has been from that retained earnings, that $1 million. And I'll keep doing that clear up to $1,500,000 in total expenditures. So right now, I have just crossed $714,000. I've still got equity, but I'm not spending it all. I'm going to spend 65% equity and 35% debt. So this is where I go to the bank and say, I want to borrow money. So again, I'm going to write right here, up to $285.71. At $714,285, I have to go to the bank and say I'm ready to start borrowing at a higher interest rate now. Because I've gone through that $250,000 I borrowed, that was 35% of my total expenditures. Now I have to come to you and ask for more. But I still haven't used up all my net income after dividend. I still haven't used all that up. But I'm not going to stop borrowing and just start spending pure retained earnings. The reason I'm not is because that would violate optimal capital structure. Every dollar I spend on projects, 35 cents is going to come from debt and 65% is going to come from equity. I'm not going to stop using debt just because I have to go back to the bank to borrow at a higher rate. I'm going to still stick to 35 cents of every dollar I spend will be debt, 65 cents will be equity. Now, I've still got equity from the net income, from the retained earnings. I've still got equity to spend. But I've got to replenish my debt so that I can keep using 35% debt for every dollar I spend. Does that give a little more context to it? Okay. So now I walk to my next one here. I say, well, my next tier of capital, when I'm borrowing at a higher debt rate, is going to be 0.35 times 7.2% plus 0.65 times 19%. That comes out to be 14.87%. See how your marginal cost of capital is rising? That's no longer weighted average cost of capital, because now we're talking about speculative borrowing and all that. And finally, there will be one more time, because this is going to be the scenario in place up to $1,538,461.54. Now, talk to me. What happens at $1,538,461.54? What big event happens at that point? I was afraid you'd say that. You're right, but there's something else that happens. So what? I didn't sell. I spent all $1 million I generated for internal equity. Once I hit $1,538,461.54, I've gone through every dollar of the $1 million I had to spend for projects. That's why that That's why, and you are technically right, that's why I do have to go out now and sell common stock. I've burned up all of my net income. So now I have to go, I've used up my paycheck for the month, now I have to go back and see what Dad's got. What the hell do you mean you're coming back to me? Okay. So now we go and we say, all right, now we're at the third tier. Debt at 35% of our capital structure costs 7.2% now and forevermore. Equity is 65% of our capital structure, and equity now costs 19.87%. The cheap equity is now gone, and we have to pay, we have to use more expensive equity. And so, the last tier, from here on out, we're going to pay 15.44%. And if the truth be told, it would probably get worse than that. Eventually, you couldn't sell stock at $50 a share because you'd flooded the market with so much, the price would fall, costs would go up. But we leave that part out. I have two breakpoints. I have three marginal costs of capital. Now, there's a rule there. If you have N breakpoints, you'll have N plus one marginal costs of capital. If you have N breakpoints, you'll have N plus 1 marginal cost of capital. From here on out, it actually gets easy. But I'm going to make a caution here in a minute. The first thing I have to do is I've got to write my investment opportunity schedule. That's where, as I had mentioned just in passing before, we relist our projects from the highest rate of return to the lowest rate of return. So if you go back to the first part of this, which the projects, Project D had the highest rate of return. But that was going to cost us $1,500,000. So that's going to be the first on our priority list, is that 18% return on Project D. If we get through that, then the next best one is A, which is going to cost us $500,000. And it's going to return 16%. If we get through that, then we are going to go to Project C. You know what I really hate about that is how I have to wipe off the microphone because it gurgles. See, you should have shut up when I did that. 600,000. And 15%. You know, this is getting bad up here. Already, I'm so hot, if I had an apple in my mouth, I'd think I was at a luau. And now something is making me want to sneeze. Ah. And then Project B pulls up the rear, $1.6 million that one would cost if we get that far, and that one returns 12%. Now, here's where you will see me turn into a beast from hell. Just in time for Halloween. Because here's where you have to graph. And so help me God, if you don't do this with a ruler, I will hunt you down like a dog and I will give you a nuclear wedgie. Nothing singes the fringe on my boxers like not using a ruler. Because I can promise you that you have to be absolutely precise, or you could very well get the wrong answer when I ask you which project should be accepted. The first thing you have to do is on this capital budget horizontal line, you're going to need to scale it for the cost so that I could possibly pay for all of those projects. In this case, $1.5 million, that's $2 million, $2 million 6, $4 million 2. So you've got to be able to reach at least a four on that horizontal axis to $4,200,000. Now, so you have to think about scaling. This is where some of the, if you had a professor like me, when I was a math teacher, I would have bitched my head off about deciding a good scale and all of that kind of stuff. Because this is where that comes back to bite you in the ass. The scale that I would suggest here is to go in $500,000 increments. 500, 1 million, 1 million 500, like that. That would be the scale that would probably be best in the limited space. Now on the vertical axis, you've got to make that vertical axis so that it reaches up to your highest cost of capital, which in this case is, well, I would, you probably want to go to 20%, okay? So that would mean that you would want to scale it so that each of those was 1%. Now, when I give you this on a quiz or an exam, I will set up the tick marks to suggest a natural scaling. I won't put the numbers on it, but I will suggest a natural scaling. Like here, you notice there were, what were there? Were there 20 tick marks? I was saying that might be a good idea to use 1% per mark. Now, the first thing you are going to do is you are going to run your investment opportunity line. Your investment opportunity line, if this is a $500,000 scale, you would want to draw $1,500,000 is going to return 18%. So that would be Project A. Then Project D. Duh. Project A comes next at 16%. So you're going to have that line spending another $500,000 out to $2 million. And then Project C would come next, drop down. It's a stair-step function. Once you've done that, carefully, you should put in your breakpoints. You should put in your breakpoints. Make them like poles. You had a breakpoint at $714,000. Put that mother in there. A nice tall pole. And then you had one at one a little bit more than $1.5 million. Put that one in as a nice long pole. Draw in your first cost of capital. 14%, 14.45%. Over to your breakpoint. Your cost of capital will then jump to 14.87%. You'll take that one over to your second break point. Do you see how you have to be so precise on these? And then you're going to jump again to your third cost of capital, which is 15.44%. Now I'm going to show you the final result of it. And that's what I want, something that you should be doing for the next couple of days here. Here's what it should look like. How much should be employed? What projects, rather, should be accepted? Projects A and B. That is your marginal cost of capital. It starts at 14.45%. At the first break point, it jumps. And then at the first break point, that's the first break point. What I always recommend you draw in is a pole to give you a guideline. Then you run along at your second cost of marginal cost of capital, 14.87%. Say it again. Oh, I screwed up there. Sorry. Boy, I'm glad you noticed that. You sure will. But look what happened. Look what happened. Say that again. I didn't hear that one. Oh. Let me back this off just a little bit here. So you see what happens is that I can, Project A returns enough that it is more than the marginal cost of capital to finance it. Project C, however, I can't pay for it. I can't afford it. It's not going to give me as much as it cost. So that's why I will accept projects D and A, because they are the only two that are entirely above the marginal cost of capital. And I was hurrying to do this one. This is the MCC line. This is the IOS line. Investment Opportunity Schedule, marginal cost of capital. That is from there. That is from there. And that is from there. And the breakpoints were what we found. The jumps are what we found on the first page. But I caution. Say it. Because I spend a total of $4.2 million. So I've spent all the money. That would be the most I could possibly spend. See, I had four projects on the table. If I did all four of them, I'd spend $4.2 million. But I cannot emphasize enough, because these are very tight calculations, you have to use a good ruler and a mechanical pencil. On Wednesday, I will give you a quiz. It will be a surprise quiz. The surprise will be that it will look very similar to the homework that I put up for last weekend. And then for next weekend, you will have a marginal cost of capital problem, and I'll just do it as a take-home problem for the weekend as a quiz. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.